things, right? A dead thing once did live. A non-living thing like a stone never was alive. And so any given object made out of matter is one of those three things. Well, since we're alive ourselves, and since we've lived a couple decades at least, some more decades, we kind of naturally know, have a feel for what things are alive and what things aren't. But it's not all that easy to just give a terse dictionary definition for. Instead, we usually do what this opening slide does. And by the way, speaking of opening slide, notice the red slide number that's always in the lower right. I really recommend when you take notes to write that slide number down, draw a line each time I change slides and write the slide number down, because like I said, if you're doing things according to my recommendations, you should be refining the notes for each slide. It's good to keep track of where you are. Well, anyway, what this opening slide is doing is presenting seven major characteristics that living things share. Now, some of these things also are true of non-living things. But non-living things don't have all seven of these, whereas living things do. It's probably not as natural as you think, though, to consider what is living or not living based on your experience. I mean, for instance, since we're in the middle of a pandemic, we've been talking about viruses a lot. Is a virus an organism? Is it a living thing? No, it's not. And why isn't it? It doesn't have at least one cell, which is the structural requirement for being an organism. An organism has to have at least one cell. So, you know, just based on that, organisms in general as a huge group come in two varieties. Unicellular organisms, those that make up, made up of exactly one cell, which is the vast majority of all organisms alive now, and that's always been true. You know, bacteria are most of the organisms, but they're not the only unicellular organisms. Anyway, they have one cell. That's enough, though, to make them alive. A virus isn't close to having a cell. It's much smaller. It's just a collection, it's a pretty small collection of molecules. Now, they interact with living things. They are biotic entities, but they don't live. Life is really just a batch of chemical reactions occurring in those cells. And the sum of all those chemical reactions that are occurring within an organism is called metabolism. Metabolism is life. Life is a process. It's the occurrence of all those chemical reactions. And this is why, and this doesn't happen in a virus. In a virus doesn't even really make sense, because a virus doesn't have a hollow interior like a cell does. But a cell allows for metabolism to happen. It operates more or less like a little test tube, a microscopic test tube, microscopically small in most cases. You know, just like a test tube in a chemistry laboratory is a way to allow chemical reactions to occur in relative isolation from the surroundings so that nothing interferes. That's exactly what cells allow to happen. The chemical reactions that are occurring within cells is metabolism, and that is life. That's why when that's no longer happening but the cell still exists, we call it a dead thing, because the process is no longer occurring. Okay? Dead things are not metabolizing. And non-living things just don't have it at all. So, yes, you're right that viri are not organisms because they don't have the bare minimum one cell required to be an organism. Unicellular organisms have that. And, of course, we and other multicellular organisms, you know, we are animals. Animals are multicellular. Plants are multicellular. Fungi, mostly, are multicellular. There's plenty of multicellular organisms alive as well. We're just the minority. we seem like we're not the minority because we're macroscopic. We see each other. We see the plants. We don't see the bacteria, but they're everywhere. They're everywhere that life exists that we know. By the way, speaking of cells, do you have a feel for how many cells make up your body or the average human adult body?
Trillions.
Correct. Roughly 100 trillion. Some number of tens of trillions, depending on the person. Those are your own cells, meaning the cells that have your DNA, except for your blood cells. Your red blood cells don't have DNA. But anyway, those are the ones that you, in a sense, own. But even though 100 trillion is a huge number that makes up your what you call your body, for every one of your own cells, there are between 10 and 100 bacteria that live in and on you. So in terms of what you call your body, you're vastly outnumbered by bacteria, actually. Most of what you call your body is bacteria. By far the most successful organisms that have ever lived. Anyway, let's go through these seven things that living things have in common, starting with response to the environment. We'll work around clockwise. There's no real order to these. They're all equally important. But response to the environment is something that all organisms do, whether they're unicellular or multicellular. You obviously know that you respond to the environment. Few of you can touch a hot stove without flinching, right? That's just a classic example of a response to the environment. But there's all kinds of responses to the environment. It doesn't have to be something that can hurt you. Even unicellular organisms respond to the environment, right? They might move toward a certain chemical or away from it. The reasons for this will become more clear when we get into later chapters, but all organisms respond to the environment. Reproduction is at least possible by organisms. I say that because I am an example of an organism that has the capacity to reproduce, but has just chosen not to. We don't have to reproduce, but we're able to. This is also an example of something that some non-living things can do, right? Like crystals, for instance, can reproduce, but they don't have all seven of these, like I said. Anyway, reproduction happens differently in different species, but it's there if they want to use it. Growth and development, two things lumped into one. They're slightly different from each other, though. Growth is increase in size, of course, right? Now, it's happened in each of our bodies. You can, in some sense, define the beginning of you as the zygote that you came from, the single cell that each human starts as, a zygote. In some sense, you can say that's your beginning. But really, it's not a beginning. And that's because that zygote didn't just pop into existence. That zygote is there as the result of previous cells, which is an important concept in biology called cell theory. This is part of cell theory. An important part of cell theory is that cells come from pre-existing cells. So yes, you can say that's the start of your life, but really your collection of cells that you call yourself are really just the latest in a continuation nearly 4 billion years long of cells creating new cells from those original successful cells that we all came from. Not all humans, all organisms, everything that's alive came from the original successful cells. And we're just continuations of cells creating new cells along the way. But anyway, growth happens in multicellular organisms by increasing the number of cells. You know, we're not just 100 trillion identical zygote cells. We did get bigger, but we also developed. So now, among those 100 trillion cells, we have various kinds of different cells that do different jobs. That's because of development. All right. But even a unicellular organism undergoes growth, right? A bacterium is created when a bacterium before it splits into two. Well, it should stand to reason that when that happens, that original bacterium splitting into two, those two new bacteria that didn't exist a moment before are not immediately as big as the first one, right? They're roughly half as big. So even a single cell has to grow a little bit. Energy processing is next, and we'll spend a lot of time on this in Unit 3, the hardest part, I was saying before, of the course. But all organisms have to continuously process energy in order to remain alive, in order for metabolism to continue to happen. There has to be a continual exchange of energy with the surroundings. Not only energy, but materials as well. But we'll have a lot to say about that. Regulation refers to keeping things within livable limits. So the chemical reactions that make up life are not just happening chaotically or out of control. They are highly regulated so that the cell and the organism can remain alive. This has to do with the notion of homeostasis, which is a word that means staying the same. Stasis is just the noun of static. Static means not changing. It's the opposite of dynamic. And so really, it's kind of a misnomer, because no organism that's alive ever stays the same. There are always changes that are occurring within any living organism. But it really, the reason the word was chosen is because most organisms can't tolerate very much change. So by regulation, they try to keep conditions within narrow limits that are tolerable. That's what homeostasis is. More formally, homeostasis is the maintenance of a relatively stable internal environment in an organism. And we'll talk about how that can happen in other chapters. Organisms also display a high degree of order compared to most things that are non-living. Now, that doesn't have to be macroscopically evident when you look at it. It doesn't have to be a visual thing at all. That's not the only way things can be ordered. But that's usually true as well. Even if you look at the metabolic pathways, though, in a cell, there's a high degree of order to that compared to chemical reactions that are happening more or less randomly outside of biology. And then the last one is evolutionary adaptation, which is a phrase that both words are important in. Evolution simply means change. And it is a big topic of 182, if you go on to that, spend a lot of time on evolution. It's such an important concept in biology, though, that we'll talk a little bit about it here, too. Evolution means change, but this is not change of organisms. Organisms don't evolve. Populations of organisms evolve over generations. And as you'll learn in 182, there are three major ways that can happen. But of those three, there's only one way, one mechanism of evolution that results in each successive generation getting a little bit more fit for their environment, more adapted, in other words. Adaptation, or to adapt in general terms, outside of biology, just everyday words, means to adjust, right? You have an adapter of some sort. It adjusts from the condition you have to a condition that you need to use, like an AC-DC adapter. Well, adaptation biologically means that a population of organisms gets better at living in the conditions in which they live each time a new generation is created. And so it's evolution because there's a change in the population. That's evolution by itself. It's evolution. It's adaptive evolution if it occurs in such a way that the fitness or the how well they can live in that, those surroundings gets better and better. And that, by the way, is what Darwin is famous for. Most people say that Darwin is famous for evolution. That's not true. Darwin is famous for being the first one to come up with a hypothesis for how evolution can happen in an adaptive way to increase fitness. And that mechanism that he came up with to explain it, which is the truth, is natural selection. That's what he's famous for. Natural selection is how the fitness of populations does increase over the generations. And the way that happens, by the way, is has to do with something we'll talk about in here a lot, which is DNA. We'll spend actually half of the term, the second half of the term, in one way or another, talking about DNA in here. And you don't have to take biology to know DNA. It's the most famous molecule in the world now. And so if you just randomly poll people on the streets, you'll probably get a lot of people saying that DNA, even if they don't understand what DNA actually is or what it does specifically, they will say that DNA gives you your traits, a lot of people, right? Which is only indirectly true. DNA doesn't give any organisms its traits directly. Traits, the things that you can do, the things that you can think, the way that you smell, everything about you really is directly the result of the specific kinds of proteins that your body is able to produce. Your proteins directly give you your traits. But even though there's no limit to the number of proteins that can be produced, any given individual, like you, doesn't know how to make any protein unless the cells are given a set of instructions for how to build those proteins. And that's what DNA's job is. So that's why you're stuck for life with only being able to build the kinds of proteins your body can build, because those are the ones that DNA is there to serve as instructions for how to build. If you were able to change your DNA, you would have different traits because you would be able to build different kinds of proteins to give you those traits. And any given individual gets dealt more or less randomly, like a hand of cards, some combination of DNA corresponding to some combination of proteins that they're able to produce, and therefore a certain suite of traits, right? And within that population, individuals vary in their traits. Some individuals just randomly won't have a very good hand that they were dealt. So for that situation that they live in, they're not going to have a very high chance of living long enough to have the chance to reproduce and therefore pass on their version of DNA compared to the ones that got randomly a good hand dealt. Those ones that got a good hand dealt DNA-wise will have proper traits for the environment, live long enough to successfully reproduce, and therefore the next generation will be more likely to have their DNA in the population than the ones that died before they reproduced. That's the selection. We're saying that nature is selecting for the things that work randomly. Okay? You're randomly given the traits, but the ones that happen to work for that surroundings, that set of surroundings, those are the ones that make it. And that's why over time populations change and they get better and better fit to their environment, assuming the environment doesn't change. Which of course it does, actually. Okay. Now, not all of these slides take as long as this opening one, by the way. So don't be scared by that. Let's go on to slide 2 though and talk about the hierarchy of biological organization. A hierarchical arrangement is kind of like it's a nested arrangement. You know, like an outline, for instance, is a hierarchy. So you have big things including smaller things, each of which includes smaller things, and so on. I could give it to you from big to small, but I'm going to start from small and go to big. Smallest, level here is the level of the atom. Now, that's not the smallest level that we can study. Even in this course, we're going to talk about the fact that atoms are made of even smaller things. But when you get to below the level of the atoms, you're not really in biology anymore. You're in physics, or chemistry at least. So these are the levels that are important in biology. Each time we go up in a level, though, we encounter what's called emergent properties. Now, to emerge means to come out. What it means here is that each higher level has something about it, some properties that the lower levels don't have at all. Now, the atoms, where we're starting here, lower level, it's not alive, but it's a biological level of organization, or a level of biological organization. Atoms, though, of different types get together to form more complex structures called molecules. And right away, you have emergent properties. Those molecules have properties that the individual atoms do not have. That's an example of emergent properties. Molecules are still not alive, so we're not yet to the living part, but all living things are made up of atoms and molecules. Molecules then combine into more complex structures called organelles, which, as you can see from the name, is like a little organ. That's what it literally means, little organ. Little because these are subcellular structures. Organelles are subcellular. They're smaller than a cell, but they're like little organs within a cell, just like a kidney is an organ within our body. And so these are things you've probably at least heard of, if not studied before, like mitochondria and endoplasmic reticulum. We'll get through that later. Those are organelles, though. Still smaller than a cell. Organelles of different types then make a more complex structure called a cell. And finally, we are at life. Right? I said that the cell is the structural bare minimum for being an organism. It's the structural unit of life, but it's also the functional unit of life. Because if you don't have that little test tube that the cell is acting at, you don't have metabolism and therefore no life. Now, we're going to go through a couple more higher levels, but I want you to realize that these next few really only apply to multicellular organisms like us. If you are among the majority of organisms, like a bacterium or any other unicellular organism, then the cell level and the organism level are really the same level, right? Because you as an organism are just that cell. But the multicellular organisms of the world have cells that combine into more complex structures called tissues. And what those tissues are depends on what type of organism you are. For us animals, for instance, we're made of four kinds of tissue: epithelial tissue, connective tissue, nervous tissue, and muscle tissue. Plants are also multicellular. They have different kinds of tissues. But anyway, tissues are a higher level. And tissues have properties that cells themselves don't. That's another emergent property. Next up is organs. It's listed here as two, but those are two separate levels. Organs and organ systems are two different levels. Organs are next. Tissues make up more complex structures called organs, things you're familiar with like the heart or the skin or the liver. Each organ is a collection of tissues that functions for a specific set of functions, right? Well, organ systems then are the next level. For humans, there are 11 organ systems, for instance, things like the circulatory system, the digestive system, and so on. Each organ system is a collection of different organs that work together for some specific set of functions. And then all of the organ systems collected together make up the entire multicellular organism. That's an individual. That is, each of you is an organism. But like I said before, organism and cell are really the same thing for unicellular organisms. They wouldn't have those levels between. Well, we're already outside of Bio 181. Bio 181 is going to remain in the cell and below. That's the difference between 181 and 182. This is biology at the cellular level. 182 is everything else. It's macroscopic biology. We're in cell biology. So this is why you'll notice soon that this course is as much a chemistry course as it is a biology course, because that's what happens at the cellular level, chemistry. But anyway, let's continue on, even though we're not going to really talk about these levels beyond this. When you include all of the organisms of the same species, and there are different ways to define species, but if you include all of them that are living in a certain area, like all the humans, for instance, then you would have a population, the next level up. The population includes only that one species, though, however many individuals there are for it in that area. Next up, though, is the community. It's the same space. The community is the same space as the population. But the community includes all of the species in that area, not just one. Okay, so the plants, the fungi, the bacteria, all are part of the community. How is that different then from the next level up, which is ecosystem? Which is also the same space, by the way. Population, community, and ecosystem are really the same space, but they're different from each other. How is an ecosystem different from the community?
What builds the communities?
What's that?
It's like what builds the communities, like
the... I mean, that's true to a sense, but that's not what makes the difference. What's different is that the community includes only the organisms there, the living things. The ecosystem includes the community plus all of the non-living things as well. The rocks and the water and the air are part of the ecosystem. They're not part of the community. All right, you see the difference there? And then the final step is the biosphere, which remains a sphere, an actual sphere in shape, for now. It's a sphere in shape because it's the only place we know there's life for sure is Earth, which itself is a sphere. Unlike the Earth, though, which is more or less a solid sphere, the biosphere is a hollow sphere with a thickness to its walls. That thickness is determined by where we find living things. So it's the inner surface of that shell that the biosphere is the deepest part we can still find living things. And it gets deeper and deeper because we keep being amazed that there are things even deeper that can still live. But as long as we find it, we have to make it deeper. And similarly, as far out in the atmosphere as we find things that are alive, that determines the other edge of the thickness. But it's a sphere because the only things that we have proof that are alive are on Earth, in or on Earth. Now, just for statistical reasons, it's almost certain that there's plenty of life out there elsewhere. But it's also pretty certain, statistically, that we'll never see any of it, and they'll never see us because of the immense distances that things are spaced out in the universe. And since you actually have to have evidence in science, even though we can feel sure that there's life out there, we have to actually find it to include it in the biosphere. If we ever do, then the biosphere will expand greatly, and it will no longer really be spherical in shape, but the biosphere changes with our knowledge. Okay, I only have a few minutes left, so I might not get all the way through this third slide, but what we see here as a photograph in the background, the rectangle, represents an ecosystem, as I was just talking about. And it doesn't matter at all which ecosystem. This is just one example of an ecosystem, but it's true for basically any ecosystem. What's being demonstrated here. And the important thing that is demonstrated here is that for any given ecosystem, there is a flow through of energy. Energy enters, it gets transformed and transferred within that ecosystem, the energy does, and then energy leaves. Now, almost always, the input of energy is in the form of sunlight. We wouldn't be here without the star, the nearest star, the sun. But that radiant energy, which is what sunlight is an example of, doesn't remain in that form. It enters the ecosystem and gets changed, it gets transformed and transferred. Transformation refers to changing into another form. For instance, the photosynthetic organisms of the world, on which we absolutely rely for our lives, capture some of that radiant energy and transform it into the form of chemical energy in the molecules that they produce powered by sunlight. That's transformation of energy. Transferring energy refers to moving that energy from one object to another. It can be a living object, a dead object, or a non-living object. There's energies bouncing around all the time within the ecosystem, but eventually, not shown here, energy will leave. It's a flow through. It will leave as heat. All right? On the other hand, the materials, energy is not matter. The materials do not flow through. They more or less stay in the ecosystem. Not perfectly, of course. There's leakage. But more or less, the materials stay within the ecosystem and just get recycled various ways. Which is why the atoms that make up you today are not going to be the same atoms that make you up tomorrow. Some of your body used to be another organism or a rock. You know, it's just always being moved around chemically within the ecosystem. And it looks like that's probably where I have to stop.